I'm Joe Heath.
I'm Tony Heath.
And this is the Watchathon of Wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
Today we're going to be talking about the second serial of the sixth season of Doctor Who, The Mind Robber, which consists of five completely existing episodes that aired from September 14th, 1968 to October 12th, 1968.
True facts!
And I would like to give a special shout out to Matt Golden of mgoldentumbles.tumblr.com.
Hey, thanks, Matt.
For getting us these episodes. You're awesome. And I'd like to welcome our returning barrel of legs, Ben Padden! He's here, you guys.
Sorry, pardon me. I was just choking on some bread. I have a cold, ladies and gentlemen, so I am availing myself of some Panera Bread soup and some Panera Bread, which I'm dumping? I'm dumping into the soup. That's the wrong word. That totally and horribly recontextualizes that event. But you know what? I'm not going to correct it. I'm going to let it sit and be its own thing.
You're the second guest in a row who has eaten during the podcast. You because sickness, and our previous guest because time zones.
So I did something very interesting yesterday.
Tell us.
I went to see Power of the Daleks in the theater.
So did we.
Did you really? Well, it's almost as if we discussed it before recording and then planned this bit, even though that is not a thing that we actually did. What did you guys think?
I enjoyed it. The animation was good for the most part. It also clears up some, like, plot problems that I had before that I wasn't, like, certain of when we were watching the recon.
You couldn't tell what was happening.
It was a lot clearer this time through.
I'm just really glad I got to see Two's hat.
Yeah.
That stupid, magnificent hat.
It's a wonderful... I don't think he wears that in any other stories, does he?
I don't know. So. I don't think so.
At least he stops wearing it very quickly. If this isn't the only one, there's not very many after that.
The animation wasn't perfect all around.
It was like a fan-made Archer episode. That's what it looked like a lot of the time. The animation on the people varied from being really good in the faces and horrible in the bodies and the body movement to being surprisingly good for the body movement but really ropey in the face area. But the Daleks looked incredible. Like, they really nailed the movement of the Daleks and even little things like when you see them coming down the ramp and the plunger wobbles. It just made me very, very happy.
The thing I was the most happy with was they got Ben's stupid grumpy face perfect.
I feel like you've fallen in love with Ben just a little bit. Like, you don't like him, but maybe that's enough.
I feel like I was a little more tolerant of him this go around. He had a lot of more jokes than I remember.
I mean, you like the ones that were at his expense.
Well, yeah, but also like when he's like, there's that one joke about being in two minds, and he's like, two bodies.
Yeah, that actually got a laugh out of everyone in the theater. We were pretty pleased with that.
The first big laugh that we had in our audience was when the doctor is sort of like going around on the planet and he meets that guy who immediately gets shot, and the doctor's just standing there like, well, oh, what?
The guy falls in four different stages. And it looks great.
The worst piece of animation was his name, Resno, the first victim of the Daleks. He looked like they just shrunk Nicolas Cage's face and put it on somebody else's head.
It's maybe just what his face looked like, though.
They did try really hard, and to an extent, they were very successful, like, recreating actor faces. I feel like with Patrick Troughton, this is the most Troughton has looked in the face for some of the animated reconstructions. I'm always comparing everything to The Invasion, because for me, that's like the gold standard for the animated recons.
That's what we've got next.
I'm not in that one, because there's no way you'd have me on two episodes in a row.
You gotta limit it. You can't give everybody too much. You gotta parcel it out.
I mean, it's not like I've done a bunch of other Cybermen episodes with you. It's not like I'm, you know, the unofficial Watchathon of Wrestle on Cybermen expert. But, you know, it's fine. It's cool. Whatever. I'm not hurt. I'm not sad about it or anything. It's good. It's fine. It's cool. And I really think that the way that the Daleks moved, it just felt natural and fluid. It felt real. realistic. It obviously felt more realistic than how the real Daleks would have moved on set. And I think this is the first time in a while I've seen the Daleks really kind of embody that kind of creepy gliding motion that a lot of people, you know, ascribe to them. I mean, we've seen it a little bit on some of the TV stories, but this is the first time I've looked at them and gone, ooh, that's actually creepy.
Yeah, it was definitely, the pacing was really good for the latter half. There was some awkward pacing at the beginning of the story. There was a lot of, like, there's just people just sort of standing around staring into space when they should probably be moving around. But, you know, animation budget.
Twofold. Firstly, yes, animation budget. There's going to be a certain amount of, well, we don't know what they did during this bit, and there's no real clues in the sound cues, so we're just going to have the Second Doctor look off camera for a little bit while he has already, he's not blowing in it anymore, he's just holding the recorder now, so we'll just hold on that shot for a bit, it's fine. And the other thing that is going to affect the pacing is obviously the fact that we're looking at Doctor Who from the 60s, which a lot of Doctor Who from the 60s is very slowly paced.
Did you say Lee Pace?
I did say Lee Pace. Lee Pace is actually in The Mind Robber, which is a stunning revelation that I'm sure that you will appreciate. But The Mind Robber is a story that does not have pacing issues. It certainly has a lot of padding, but it doesn't have a lot of issues vis-a-vis pacing.
Mm. No, because a lot of them are so short.
Yeah, because the previous serial, The Dominators, which is 5 episodes, was supposed to be 6, and they were like, no, that's too long, make it 5. And then they're like, well, now we need to compensate. So The Mind Robber, which was supposed to be 4 episodes, they gave an extra episode, so it's 5. One last thing I want to say about the power of the Daleks before we move on to the Mind Robber is I know they go to a lot of trouble to make it as close to what was originally intended as possible. I mean, I know that's not 100% what they can do.
Tony's so tired of this conversation. She's done. She's tapped out.
He's
just very upset about this thing.
They go off like reference materials and the scripts and the existing footage. They make it black and white, even though they don't technically have to because it's animation. So if that's the case, why is it 16:9 and not 4:3?
That's a great question. And I think the answer to that question is they wanted to show it in theatres and they wanted to broadcast it on BBC America. BBC America did co-produce the animated reconstruction. So they probably said, you've got to do it in 16:9, guys.
Because they don't want to show black bars.
And keep in mind, we're talking about a network that when they did the Doctor Revisited series, where once a month they were doing a story for each Doctor, a lot of the classic stuff they would either just stretch or they would crop. The worst thing in the world was seeing them broadcast Spearhead from Space. I know it exists in high def because I have it on my shitting shelf. But they chose to broadcast it in standard definition, stretched to widescreen.
Why?
Because they're dumb.
I haven't felt this upset since what happened to Buffy on Netflix. So now,
The Mind Robber?
Let's talk about The Mind Robber.
Neat!
Yay! It's one of my favorite classic serials of all time.
You know what?
It's mine too.
Same. So let's dive in. Episode 1, which I have titled Nowhere's Like Home.
I would have called it Big Stakes, Small Set Budget.
This first episode feels a lot like A, The Edge of Destruction, and B, the first episode of the Space Museum. Not the rest of the Space Museum, but the first episode. They have that weird vibe.
You just don't know what's happening. You genuinely don't know what's happening.
They're just throwing weird shit at you, and you're like, what is going on?
It's just like, okay, I'm with this. I don't know what's happening, but I'm super there. I'm super here for it.
That's my favorite.
It's pretty great, because this was the episode, more or less, that they wrote to fill the gap when they truncated the Dominators by an episode. A lot of this is, well, what do we got? Nothing? Okay, cool, we can work with that. And then they did, and it's ridiculous how good it is. It's eerie. It's super, super eerie.
We start off where we left off in the Dominators, which is the volcano that's gonna, I guess, bury the TARDIS.
Zoe thinks it's pretty.
Yeah, I love Zoe.
It's terrifying. The lava that is definitely lava and not soapy water is racing towards them at an alarming speed.
They're not letting go of that foam thing anytime
this
soon.
This two era loves some foam.
The Second Doctor's era loves foam like the Fourth Doctor's era loves bubble wrap.
I think that just Doctor Who loves bubbles in general. I mean, the Daleks have bubbles.
That's true.
That's all I got.
I really thought you'd have something more developed there. I was with you.
I genuinely thought we were heading into a bit, and you ran out of steam so quickly. It's like, you ran out of steam so quickly, the train did not get completely out of the station. There are people on the back three carriages who could, if they wanted to, disembark and catch the next train.
That's all right, you'll get the next one. So, they're being buried in the foam.
No, it's lava, it's definitely lava, yes. It's absolutely lava.
Jamie's the only one who's really worried about this. They're like, we're safe, we're in the TARDIS. And Jamie's like, okay, but like, are you certain? Like, do you know? Like, no? It's probably safe. It's fine.
The Doctor, once again, showing a characteristic lack of depth vis-a-vis TARDIS operation and safety thereupon. I'm going to be saying a lot of words that don't functionally make sense because, and I do want to stress this, I have a cold. So words are not necessarily coming to me with their usual speed and grace. But goddammit, I'm going to try.
I think you're doing fine.
Thank you. I think I sound like a sexy Patrick Stewart.
Why do you have to put the word sexy on the front of it? That's implied.
Right, isn't that a given?
It's like sexy Halloween costume. They're all sexy. What about the one that's a dinosaur, Ben? Well, if you need me to explain to you why a T-Rex is sexy, maybe you don't deserve a T-Rex.
I now want to see Ben Patton in a T-Rex costume. A sexy I've always T-Rex wanted to, costume? But whatever.
Maybe I'll do that for Gallifrey this year.
They realize that there's an emergency thing.
They try to take off, and it doesn't work.
So the Doctor's like, don't worry, there's an emergency switch. And everyone's like, okay, press it. And the Doctor's like, I probably shouldn't.
But I don't really know what will happen. They're like, okay, well, either we die or we do this other thing.
There's that wonderful moment when the Doctor's like, oh, but the ship could explode! It's like, but or buried in lava. I mean, it's really, given the choice, I'd rather go with a bang.
There's been previous instances where he's like, very purposely been like, either this will work or the ship will explode. Let's find out. And this time he's worried about it? When before he's just like, let's do it, I don't care.
Well, maybe before he was joking to try to leaven the mundanity of the otherwise extraterrestrial incursion. And on this occasion he's like, I'm not kidding this time. This time it could blow us all up.
Maybe.
They hit the little emergency switch.
Jamie forces him to.
Oh yeah, they're out of the lava, but now they're nowhere.
They're in Vincent Natalie's nothing. That's a movie probably only I've seen. Woo!
The TARDIS materializes on BBC Soundstage 16 or wherever. See, now I want to look up the filming location so I can do that joke properly. And you can edit all of this out. And no one need ever know I made a stupid joke that didn't work. The TARDIS materializes at Ealing Television Film Studios with no decor. Did that work? It might have been Lime Grove, Studio D. Let me do a few different versions. Okay. The TARDIS materialises at BBC Television Centre, Shepherd's Bush, London. The TARDIS materialises at Ealing Television Film Studios in Ealing Green. The TARDIS materialises at Studio D of Lime Grove Studios. And finally, just in case you want one for fun, the TARDIS materialises in a great big bushy beard.
God, I want that episode.
Wait a couple of seasons.
So the Doctor says he's going to go, like, fix things. And he says he's heading off to some room, which I didn't quite catch, but we both heard pie room. I don't think he's going to the pie room. Or maybe he is. I don't know.
I hope so.
I hope there's a pie room.
In the TARDIS that's just full of pie.
And then Jamie criticizes Zoe's outfit, and she goes to change into the most glorious, like,
sparkly jumpsuit I've ever seen in my life. I love it.
But I will say, this jumpsuit leads to a moment that, as a kid, I did not fully appreciate. And now, as an adult, I can enjoy it with the full depth that my adult body will allow me to. It is an historical moment in Doctor Who history. Predating Amy Pond in a policewoman's outfit. Predating even Leela in her skimpy leather bikini.
He is talking, of course, about the sparkle butt.
But we're not there yet.
We haven't gotten the full moon yet.
Or in light of recent weather, the supermoon.
This is not the first time they've put, like, Zoe in some sort of skimpy-ish or...
Well, the jumpsuit's more like...
Yeah, it's not skimpy, but it's form-fitting. But, like, they had that outfit she wore in the Dominators. They keep putting her in certain outfits. Everybody's like, can we go out? And the Doctor's like, no, that'd be bad.
No, I don't understand where we are. Just stay here where it's safe. And they're like, no.
Jamie turns the scanner on, or it comes on by itself. I don't remember which.
It's both. He turns it on and it comes on by itself.
It's the TARDIS. It can do whatever.
I think the scanner comes on by itself.
Yeah, and it shows Scotland and plays bagpipes, just so you know it's Scotland.
Actually, the sound of bagpipes actually comes from the natural noises emitted by the Scottish Highlands.
And Jamie puts on the dopiest, happiest face.
They splice it, and it's like a bloody Celine Dion music video.
Oh, it's so great. Zoe comes in and is like, there's nothing there. He's like, it must be covered in the fog, the mist of the Highlands. She looks at the scanner and it shows, you know, a random future city. And then she does the dopey face and the Celine Dion music video. And I don't know if there was any musical instruments attached, but it should have been a theremin. Because that screams future! And neither one of them think this is weird.
No, they both know that they're right and the other one's wrong, and that's what's out there.
And that they're both home. The doors open, Zoe opens the doors, and rushes out. This Jamie's left the room to go talk to the doctor, like, she won't believe me about Scotland. She runs out and immediately fades into nothing.
And then the scanner goes blank.
Yeah, and Jamie and the doctor come back and see that the door is open, and that Zoe's gone.
Zoe's stepped out and gone, and Jamie's immediate reaction is to go, oh no, she's vanished, I should go after her, and vanish also, because that's how I'll find her.
Yeah, he's not always the brightest.
He's a one-track mind when it comes to being protective of people.
Unfortunately, there aren't any trains on that track.
She's lost in Scotland! He's so one-track minded. The TARDIS starts making weird noises in the doctor's brain, and he proceeds to try to fight them with his brain.
Now, my memory of this, and I will be honest, I didn't rewatch it last night because I was going to see Power of the Daleks instead, and I've had a pretty busy schedule. But my memory of this is there's voiceover of him fighting, or is he actually speechifying at this point? I can't remember which one it is.
No, it's voiceover.
It's voiceover, yeah.
He's doing the, like, fingers to temples and, like, squinting really hard and, like,
my mind to your mind. My thoughts to your thoughts.
So it's probably like, we have a very low budget, the doctor needs to fight something, so let's just have him squint at nothing. That'll work.
And then they still fade in the Scottish Highlands and play the bagpipe music over the top of that as well, because I want an idea of, like, the doctor, like, mentally fighting off bagpipe music.
And then we get Zoe and Jamie running around trying to find each other, and they eventually do.
In the void.
But then they don't know how to get back. Zoe's like, how do we get back? He's like, oh, I know. And then Jamie's like, walks for, like, five steps, and then goes, you know what, though? I think we're lost. And so they start calling out for the doctor. But instead of the doctor showing up, we get borrowed robots.
Some borobots.
Robots!
These robots are from a different program entirely. They just took them from a different show.
The white robots that close in on Jamie and Zoe in the void outside the TARDIS were previously used in an episode of the science fiction television series Out of the Unknown.
Out of the Unknown and into Doctor Who.
The episode was The Prophet, originally transmitted 1st of January, 1962. This episode now no longer exists in the BBC archives. Suck it, Out of the Unknown! Doctor Who outlasted you by like 50 years! Suck an elf!
And now these robots you get to see visually because they reused them. Doctor Who, and a thing that actually does exist.
And guys, this is going to shock you, but I think these robots are cute.
You empathize a lot with soulless automatons who are incapable of expressing emotion.
That's why yep. She married me.
Comedy.
So these robots have like these hexagonal sticky out pieces on their chest.
Sticky out pieces.
And I'm pretty sure one of them had fallen off because all of the robots just sort of walk around like normal, except for one of them who's very clearly like holding it on.
The doctor's in the TARDIS and he gets the image of Jamie and Zoe in his head. Are they dressed in white?
Yeah.
Yes. They have the same outfits, but they're all white.
It's like they've died and it's Randall and Hopkirk deceased. It's pretty amazing. And then a voice implores him to follow them and save them. He refuses, but the voice is like, you know, I think you're probably gonna, because otherwise the narrative of this episode will stop dead. So you will just you'll just have to go for it. You're just gonna have to go for it.
Like, for Zoe and Jamie, Zoe City and Jamie Scotland sort of start fading into existence, like, luring them. Zoe resists, but Jamie's like, but bagpipes! And Zoe just, like, slaps him in the face.
Right in the face. That's pretty good.
But the robots do get to them and sort of hypnotize them. And then the doctor leaves the TARDIS. And the TARDIS is also white now. Everything's white.
Which is very exciting for some reason.
Yeah, it's very cool. Visually nice.
It's different as well. I think that's one of the... They didn't have a lot of money, but they sure had a lot of white paint.
I think it goes a long way to making it kind of unsettling.
Because the TARDIS is a very familiar shape in Doctor Who, and we're used to seeing it be the same colour. So the idea that it's not as it should be is actually kind of creepy. It certainly creeped me out as a kid when I first saw this story.
I think I gasped when we were watching it and he walked out of the TARDIS the first time and I was like, oh no!
Oh no!
The doctor tries to call out to him with his mind and they eventually do all get to the TARDIS and he shoves Jamie and Zoe inside. They're kind of brain zony.
Back in the TARDIS, by the way, their clothes go back to normal.
Makes sense.
They all get back inside the TARDIS and the doctor's like, we gotta leave. We gotta go.
It's weird here.
But this TARDIS starts acting all funny. Zoe is sort of fine, but Jamie is like passed out and having nightmares. You hear his dreams, and it's like a very robotic sounding horse. But he says it's a a unicorn, because he wakes up.
No, he doesn't know that it's a unicorn.
He just describes it.
A horse with a horn on its head. So he's like, you mean a unicorn? And he's like, sure.
That's not even a thing, dude.
The doctor says, because they all sort of hear this noise, and he's like, they're still in our head. Whatever this is, they're in our head. There's an alien vibration there.
I'm picking up alien vibrations. She's giving me hallucinations.
I just had flashbacks to working at the movie theater because we had a machine that would play that song like every 5 minutes.
But then things go a little nuts. Everything goes like to 11. The TARDIS starts spinning. We see it spinning in like just a blank void. And then it explodes into like
the whole TARDIS explodes.
Comes apart.
It's, I mean, visually, it's terrifying.
Like, Tony and I both were like, whoa, what? It's unexpected.
It literally gets pulled apart in the void, and there are just pieces of it flying around. The TARDIS explodes!
And the console is just spinning in space, and Zoe and Jamie are clinging to it.
I'm watching it now, ladies and gentlemen. I have it up on my screen, because I couldn't not.
It looks like something from an 80s music video. She's just, like, draped across this weird thing in her sparkly jumpsuit.
She's draped across the console. The whole thing like slowly revolves.
And it's focused on her
sparkle booty.
It's pretty amazing. It doesn't linger on the shot as long as the memory might think it did, or it perhaps want it to have done. But it definitely, there is a moment there. But then she points and she goes, Jamie, look, and then screams 18,000 times. And then we get a shot of what I assume is Patrick Troughton sitting on an office chair, just kind of shuffling around on his feet. But we only see him from like the shoulders up.
And then there's smoke. That's it. That's the end of the episode.
That's the end of episode one.
And you're like, what the hell? End the episode.
Nothing makes sense.
No, you don't know where this is going, but you're 100% on board.
Yeah, and it doesn't get any less weird in the next episode. Maybe a little less weird. But so that was the end of episode one. We're now into episode two, which I actually have two titles for, and I don't know which one I like. My first title was Riddles in the Dark, and my second title is Face or Fiction.
My title for this episode is Robert Mindington's Bizarre Emporium of Things, which doesn't make sense. No, I'm also going to refer to this episode as the John Travolta, Nicolas Cage wacky fun time half hour as an alternative to calling it Face Off.
Nice. This is the episode that you've talked about before on this very podcast.
Oh my god, yeah, because this is genuinely like one of the scariest moments in Doctor Who history for me happens in this episode. Thinking about it fills me with dread. I'm not going to lie when I say that talking about it here and now is going to be slightly uncomfortable for me. But you know what? I'm going to do this. Let's soldier on. So the episode opens, like the first, I mean, I'm watching it again right now. The first minute of this episode is just a recap of episode one, the cliffhanger from episode one. We get that butt shot again. And it's a little longer this time. And you know how I know? I just watched it. And then, just for no reason whatsoever, it fades out, and then we're in a forest of some sort, and Jamie is,
of pickles.
You look at this and you think, what are these? Are they trees? Are they pickles? They do look like Cadbury flakes, just jutting out of the ground, giant Cadbury flakes.
I don't know what that is.
Google Cadbury flake. Or don't.
Is that a British thing, or is it?
It's a British candy.
Oh.
They sell them at the gas station down the road from me.
That is what they look like.
They look like beef jerky candy.
But oh so much better.
I would hope so.
You'd have to hope so, because hope is all you have left.
It looks like chocolate-covered beef jerky.
You know what? I'm not going to correct you, because I think what they actually are is only going to disappoint you.
I'm used to disappointment.
You know what? So is Tony.
I was thinking that's a good place for a callback.
And Jamie's sort of wandering around this forest of pickles / Cadbury flakes, and he sees a red coat. He screams his
mantra. He's ready to fight.
Mantra.
Which I think Seamus would be happy to hear.
Yeah.
As this Gaelic.
He pulls out his knife, and he says that thing that Jamie is known to say. He says, I must not fear death. Fear is the mind killer. Fear is the whatever it is that brings total oblivion, whatever. I didn't read Dune. Stab! And then he lunges forwards, and then gets turned into a very quickly and cheaply made cardboard cutout of himself, where you can tell the picture's not been printed on the board evenly, because it has wrinkles and air bubbles all over it.
And that's what frightened you, right? The just ineptitude of making the cardboard cutout.
Oh no, we're not scared yet. We're not scared yet, ladies and gentlemen. You guys don't know the true meaning of fear.
So then we cut to Zoe, who's wandering around, lost, and finds this, like, castle door. And the door opens, and it takes, like, 5 years, and it's the squeakiest damn door I have ever heard. Because nobody oils castle doors, I guess.
Why would they?
Or in anything. Anytime you see, like, a metal door open, it's gonna make that same creak noise. Hate that noise. It's my least favorite sound effect.
I always get annoyed when you hear like a wooden door open in television shows, and it's always that same one. It's that one same library sound. It's that particular sound effect. And it bugs me every time.
That one that gets me is the metal door. That's like, there's a very specific one, and I hate it. It's used in everything. That specific sound effect drives me bananas. So that aside, Zoe falls down a hole.
She falls down a hole. That's it. We then cut to some guy, I guess, watching the episode on three televisions. Because he likes Doctor Who that much, guys. He's really into it. Literally, the middle screen is Jamie as a cardboard cutout. And then there's nothing on the other screens except the giant flakes.
Because he's got three TVs. One's on Jamie, one's on Zoe, but he can't find the Doctor. That's really messing up his stories.
So he decides to turn the lights up, which makes sense, I guess.
Spider-Man, could you turn off the dark?
Spider-Man, shut off that light. Leave it, Spider-Man. It's gone midnight. Some of us are trying to sleep.
And then coincidentally, the Doctor's like, "It's dark. I wish it wasn't so dark." And then the lights come up, and he's like, "Well, thank you, whoever."
Lucky him.
Then the robots start coming for him. They're not the same robots, though.
Oh, no, they're different robots. They're entirely different robots.
They're not even really robots.
They're just guys.
Just guys in costumes. Sexy Halloween costumes.
Or Halloween costume, because all Halloween costumes are inherently sexy.
And in the process of trying to get away from these soldiers, is what they'll eventually be revealed to be, specific soldiers. But anyway, he bumps into this guy who starts talking to him in multiple languages. And this guy,
which the Doctor has trouble understanding at first, until he's gets like, him to
"Can
you
speak
English?"
Which would not be a thing that would happen on Doctor Who now, because TARDIS thingies.
Well, I mean, we're in the land of fiction, so it's easy to deduce that within the land of fiction, maybe the TARDIS can't do that, because fictional French is not the same as real French.
And also, the TARDIS exploded, so TARDIS isn't actually there.
Yeah, I mean, that's also a thing. The TARDIS exploded, like, 4 minutes ago.
The guy that the Doctor bumps into accuses him of being a bad guy in some very flowery language. They find out that they both have lost their companions, which they literally say companions, which always makes me giggle. I don't know why. I just enjoy every time companions is dropped.
They said the thing.
He mentions that the Doctor is wanted by the Master. And also, again, I'm like, the Master?
The Master, at this point in Doctor Who chronology, the character we know as the Master hasn't appeared yet. So if this is your first exposure to Doctor Who, maybe you're thinking, or not your first exposure, but the first time you're watching the classic series through, maybe you're thinking, oh, is this? Could it be? You're going to get disappointed.
Yeah, it's not. It's not, you guys.
It's a guy in a hat. That's all it is.
I will say this. This actor has appeared in two other Doctor Who serials playing a Time Lord. It was a commonly held fan theory that this character, who, I mean, spoiler alert, this is Gulliver, is that other character that was played by the same actor in future episodes. So, and that actually found its way into some of the spin-off material. And I don't like that. I don't like this constant need by fans of a thing to tie characters that look the same into being, oh, they're the same person. This is clearly the same time. No, why can't it just be bloody Gulliver? Why can't it just be a fictional character within the... Why do you have to like try and tie a neat bow over this? Why do you... You don't have to do it. Just let it be what it is. There's no narrative link between Colin Baker's Doctor and the character he plays in that Fifth Doctor serial. That you don't need... You don't have to do that. Just let it be a thing. Just let the same actor play multiple characters and get on with the rest of your life. You have bills to pay. You're an adult. Come on.
Actually, I think the best thing that I've ever seen do that is the Ten Doctors comic, where they have, I think his name is Maxil or something like that.
Yes.
They have them meet, and like all the companions are like, "Why do you guys look exactly the same?" And the Doctor and Maxil are like, "I don't know what you're talking about."
I love it.
We look totally different, and I'm a little offended that you couldn't tell us apart.
That's great. I love that. I haven't read that 10 Doctors comic in a very long time.
I should read it again now that I know who a lot of the people in it are now.
So this guy who's Gulliver, who we don't know is Gulliver yet, but we will, vanishes. And then suddenly my worst nightmare happens. And suddenly we are surrounded by children. Children are scary, you guys. especially
just
children.
Being surrounded by them is scary.
And if and they're also, asking you a bunch of questions.
So many questions.
This is why I called the episode Riddles in the Dark, is because they're asking him riddles, and he's like having to answer all of these riddles, like one right after the other, which was kind of fun because I was also answering them. It was like it was interactive. They did the last riddle they have is the simplest riddle out of all of them, which, and it takes the Doctor way too long to figure out, which is he has to turn swords into something else. And it's like, you've got to rearrange the letters.
What can you make of a sword is the riddle in question.
Yeah, and it's words is the answer. Because you just move that S. That's it. That's literally it. And they throw the sword up in the air, and then it turns into a book, a dictionary.
Just like in real life.
That always happens.
I was like, did this turn into the Phantom Toll Booth? Is that what's happening here?
The Wikia describes this the next sequence as, the school children bit the Doctor goodbye, suggesting that they sunk their teeth into his flesh and then left, which is not what happens.
No, you haven't seen it in a while. That's what happened. Because they're in Twilight. That's the book they're in.
That's the book that they're in is Twilight. Not literally any other book. Oh, could you imagine a remake of this story where it's like Harry Potter and Edward Cullen and other characters, I guess?
I would be down for that. Harry Potter would make sense because Doctor Who seems to really enjoy making Harry Potter references. They should go back to the land of fiction and they have to deal with Harry Potter stuff. That's how I would do this episode in Modern Who. At no point does the Doctor theorize that they're inside the human mind, which is disappointing.
You're very upset that this is something that does not come up as a recurring motif in Doctor Who stories.
Just the Doctor wrongly thinking they're inside the human mind. That should happen, like, once an episode.
I'm just a big fan of any time the Doctor's wrong. I think it's fun. At this point, the Doctor finally stumbles across Cardboard Jamie.
Yes, he does. And this is the moment. Terrifies me.
So he finds this cardboard Jamie, and there's also a safe and a wishing well. The Doctor throws the book in the wishing well for some reason. That seems the logical thing to do. And the well starts laughing at him. Some very cheap effects of words appearing show up. There's like an M with a slash through it, and there's no M, there's no T, and there's no H. There's pictures to go along with it. And all
it's a,
adds
it's a
up
picture
to,
puzzle. Yeah.
It all adds up to Jamie is safe and well with the hand with no H is and, which you could have just got that with Jamie, safe, well. You didn't need all those words. The cardboard cutout, the face disappears. It's gone now. And then there's a board of pieces of faces. And the Doctor's like, oh, I just got to put it together. I can do this. I know what Jamie looks like.
Because the Doctor doesn't know what faces look like.
Ben looks frightened already. You all right?
Sorry. Yeah, I was just kind of trapped in a nightmarish hellscape of my own imagination, where people's faces are interchangeable and can be switched around at will. And it genuinely is a thing. This is a genuinely unsettling moment for a six-year-old, red-haired British child who catches this airing in, I want to say, 1992 in the UK. This was a genuinely harrowing moment for me. And it took a long time for me to get over it.
You know this has happened to the Doctor at least 12 times, right?
What? Nobody changes in Doctor Who. Actually, my friend Seb likes to tell a joke. How many Doctor Who fans does it take to change a light bulb?
How many?
Change!
So anyway, continue telling us about your childhood traumas.
Which one? There's the one where I fell down the stairs and cracked my head open. But mostly it's this, and it's the doctor trying to rebuild Jamie's face from, discarded identikit remnants. And getting it so, so wrong. And realizing that he's gotten it wrong, but too late. For Jamie is brought back to life with entirely the wrong head.
That scene starts and I just was like, oh no, I would have the exact same results. The exact same.
If you had to rebuild Joe's face and get it right, do you confidently believe you could do it without screwing it up?
No.
Wow. Okay, look, I have a distinctive face mark here
for
my
that.
Eyes.
I could get the eyes.
He's pointing at his entire face, ladies and gentlemen. I have a distinctive face mark, and then he proceeds to do the Vogue.
I could probably get your eyes. I could probably get your, like, mouth.
You have the wrong nose and ears for the rest of your life.
I was just going to say,
and
pick
then
the
I would
ones
pick
with
the
biggest
ears.
Features. the biggest ears, the biggest nose, and the biggest teeth, and you're fine. You got me.
It's like someone went to create a character in The Sims and just set all the dials to maximum.
That's me!
That's what Joe's face looks like.
But the head is too small.
You are literally a Monster Factory creation.
I'm a Shrek.
Could you do my face?
Yeah, probably.
I love. Whoa, you started so confident. Yeah, probably. Yeah, like the dip.
Let's not test it.
No, I want to turn Tony into a cardboard cutout with a blank face and provide you with several possibilities for rebuilding a face and see if you get it right.
All right, I'm down for that.
Make that a Patreon goal.
I sort of knew that this scene was happening because you've hinted at it before. I thought there was going to be way more pieces, and I was like, that is pretty tough. He had 3 pieces and he fucked it up. It's like that goddamn monkey on Legends of the Hidden Temple. How do you fuck that up so easily?
Listen.
There's 3 pieces.
Faces are confusing.
It is hard. Especially when you're looking at them as separate components, not as one whole.
And behind the scenes information here, the only reason that this happened is because the actor got chicken pox.
Fraser Hines was out that week. There are conflicting reports as to whether it was because he had chicken pox or was booked for vacation, as frequently happened because Doctor Who shot all year round. They would often build in vacation times. As an example, Power of the Daleks. Polly has a vacation during episode 4, and then Ben is on vacation during episode 5.
I did notice that. I enjoyed Ben's vacation.
I enjoyed Ben's vacation. Ben had a great time, and Ben hopes to go back soon.
But there's just a different person playing Jamie for the rest of the episode.
Which is great.
He does a really good job of being Jamie, I feel like.
He doesn't touch the Doctor enough.
Yeah, that's that. You gotta rub your hands all over the Doctor if you're gonna be Jamie.
That's just the rules.
You gotta grab at him.
Jamie grabs not just the Doctor, he grabs everyone. If there's somebody near him, he's holding on.
Well, you also have to remember that Fraser Hines and Patrick Troughton had a rapport, or a rapport. If you are American. This new actor, Hamish Wilson, who played him in this episode and the next episode, who is, by the way, not Fraser Hines' cousin. What common myth is that Hamish Wilson was related to Fraser in some way, and that is not true. Although Fraser's brother, Ian, did play one of the Clockwork Soldiers.
I had an unfortunate reaction where I was just like, this guy's doing a good job, but there's a part of me that hates him.
Because he's not Fraser.
Yeah, where it's just like, it's just weird. Like, my brain is, like, confused and doesn't like it. But I got over it. By the time I got over it, he switched back.
I also thought, he's doing a really good job. The accent seems a little off sometimes. And then I realized it's probably because this guy is actually Scottish.
It might be. His name is Hamish, so...
He might be getting it more right than
we're used to the
Jamie.
Bad Scottish accent, and we're confused.
Hamish, there's a new Jamie. There's a new Jamie in town.
Jamish.
He's Jamie-ish. They go off to find Zoe, and they get to the door, the squeaky-ass door, but that door is no longer a door.
It's a jar. I wanted to say it. It's a jar.
Once they realize that the door is not a door and that it's a jar, it turns into a jar.
Oh, you skipped over the riddle. You skipped over a whole riddle.
What's the riddle?
Jamie missed safe hand well.
Oh, no, yeah, I mentioned that already.
Oh, did you? Oh, that must have been when I was having my panic attack.
I think it was.
Okay,
it was,
I'm sorry.
Actually.
You can edit that bit out. I want to say edit that bit out. I mean, edit out the bit where you actually mentioned it so that this bit makes more sense in context. I don't want to be wrong, okay? I have a reputation to maintain. I was trying to keep my wits about me as we entered the psychological Saw-esque terror house that was Jamie's cardboard cutout face.
We're going to get it again, too. Did it bother you as much the second time?
Not so much the second time, because I was able to... the first time it was unexpected, and the second time it was, okay, all right, I can do this time. And you know what? I have faith in the Doctor to not fuck it up. I didn't say those words, or indeed think them, because I was 6. But the spirit of the letter was maintained. The letter in question being F, for fuck.
So, yeah, we're at the door that's not a door that turns into a jar because they realize that's the thing. Again, this seems very Phantom Tollbooth. And then the door turns into a jar, and Zoe is inside the jar, to which they just open the jar and get Zoe out. And Zoe's like, who the fuck is this guy? Verbatim.
Yeah, it was really pushing the boundaries of what you could say on British television in the 60s.
And then the Doctor just doesn't explain. He's just like, oh, that's Jamie. Why is that Jamie? We got stuff to do.
I'll tell you later, when Jamie's not standing right here.
Yeah, it's rude to talk about someone when they're standing right there. But it's also rude to talk about someone behind their back. So really, you should never talk about other people.
I try not to. They're terrible, just in general.
You're failing. See, now you're talking about them. See?
Ah, shit! What do I talk about?
Doctor Who, I guess.
Yeah, he's not a real person. He's fictional.
But he's also not here. I love you said that, like, yeah, I get you, but the look on your face was like, wait, what? What are you trying to say, Ben?
That's just my face all the time about everything.
Yeah, that is just kind of what it looks like.
I'm faking it 90% of the time, and that's underestimating how much I fake it.
It's like a psychological chronic illness. You're not pretending to be sick, you're pretending to be well.
Yes.
I'm allowed to make that joke, ladies and gentlemen. I have fibromyalgia. Pity me.
So Jamie climbs a tree.
Cut to exterior tree, day, continuous. He's just up the tree now.
He climbs up and he finds out that the trees are not trees, the trees are not pickles, the trees are not Cadbury Flakes.
And Soylent Green is people.
And Ben is Glory.
Wait, Ben is Glory?
Yeah, Ben Padden is Glory.
Yes.
So the trees are actually letters, and the letters form proverbs.
Like, in for a penny, in for a pound, look before you leap. I think those are the only two that are said on screen.
An apple a day. No, that wasn't on there. But that would have been a good reference, because doctor.
Because it's about a doctor, and that's who the show's about.
Have a break, have a Kit Kat. Can't get enough of that fancy feast.
That's one spicy meatball.
It's a good a show is in there, I think.
Live from New York at Saturday Night.
That was in there as well. Take the Gun, Leave the Cannoli is definitely in there. Skip to the End is in there as well from Spaced, obviously. And Pikachu, I Choose You, I think was also one of them.
So they bump back into...
Tony killing the bit.
Somebody's got to, man.
Quick question. Do you think that the Doctor has at any point played Pokemon? And which incarnations do you think would be most likely to collect voraciously go?
I know absolutely nothing about Pokemon, so I cannot contribute.
Five playing Pokemon Go.
You really? Oh, actually, you know what? I see it. Five would probably play Pokemon Go. I think 2 and 11 would be playing Pokemon Red and Pokemon Blue against each other, like trying to like trade, which gives 11 obviously the advantage because he already knows what the second Doctor's going to do. I think that the sixth Doctor would be slightly annoyed by the entire thing, and I think that the 12th Doctor would find the entire enterprise to be thoroughly ridiculous and refuse to participate.
So would one.
But Susan would be way into it.
8 would be playing with a Tamagotchi and be like, am I doing this right?
That feels right. That feels good.
8 is probably more into Digimon than Pokemon.
That's his human side coming out.
On his mother's side.
So we learned that the trees are letters.
And the eyes have hills. Or the hills have eyes. Sorry. Let me do that bit get in. You say your line and then I'll say mine.
Nope.
Shit.
So they bump into Gulliver again on his travels. He says that the Master's set tests. Is that what happens?
Yes.
And they're having a chat, and they hear the robots coming, the soldiers, rather.
And Gulliver can't see the robots.
They hide in a J and a C. They're very excited that there's a J and a C.
The Doctor has a line, he's like, oh, there's a J, that's room for two people. Oh, no, here's a C. The delivery he gives, he's very excited about finding a C, and it's adorable.
And he's like, he tells Gulliver, hey, we're hiding, you're not, for some reason. He's like, I'm gonna keep guard. And he's like, well, don't rat us out. And then he immediately rats them.
Yeah, that happens.
It's basically pretty much like, there's people in there.
Hey, Gulliver's super unreliable.
And then that's when we find out that the robots are toy soldiers. We never fully saw them until now. They lead Jamie, the Doctor, and Zoe out to the outskirts of nothing. And a unicorn shows up. The unicorn from Jamie's dream.
From his dream!
And that's when Jamie realized that he was a replicant.
End of story.
So, that was the end of episode 2. We are now into episode 3. Which I have titled Mazes and Monsters, after the Tom Hanks classic based on the novel by somebody I don't remember.
I refer to episode 3 as, we found all these great stock animations from old movies that we're going to use, and you can't stop us.
So the unicorn is charging.
It's got very low battery.
Thank you. They do the opposite of clapping for fairies. They just stop believing in it, and
they straight up murder some fairies.
The opposite of clapping for fairies is punching for pixies.
I played bass for Punching for Pixies. They just go, I don't believe, I don't believe, I don't believe, and the unicorn turns into a cardboard cutout. And
that's
then,
what happens here.
Yeah. And then the unicorn's face disappears, and they have to rearrange the unicorn's face, and they give it Jamie's face accidentally, and the unicorn now has Jamie's face.
Guys, none of that's true.
But wouldn't that be awesome?
No, that would terrify me.
just Jamie's head on like a long horse neck.
Ugh. Okay.
Wide-eyed, still acting like a horse, but just with Jamie's face.
Is it too late to leave the podcast?
It's never too late.
I hope not.
No, me too.
Tony, who do you want to regenerate into when you inevitably abandon the podcast?
Someone successful, I hope.
Someone talented, maybe.
And meanwhile, the master guy is watching this, and he's very impressed with their progress, and he decides to let them go, continue on their quest.
The trap is already set. Mm. No matter what they do, they'll end up in the same place.
And then they walk into a forest of cobwebs, and they find a house there. I don't believe it's made out of gingerbread. And then that's when Jamie, the exact same thing happens. There's a red coat, Jamie shouts his thing, charges at him, and gets shot. Because he didn't learn from what happened last time. But he turns into a cardboard cutout again. His face disappears. And they have to do the face thing again. But this time, Zoe is there to be like, no.
Oh, the
not that one.
You need someone to do proper proofing of your facial reconstructions.
I love that both times the doctor's like, that's his nose. What a cute nose. Both times.
Do you think it... Okay, so he had a completely different face for the last one. Do you think it would be weirder if he had like, part of his face, but some part of somebody else's face? Like, if he clearly had Jamie's eyes, but everything below it was different.
I don't like it. I don't want to think about it anymore.
I think I've broken Ben twice now.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Jamie's back. That was weird.
That was weird, and it's over now.
Thankfully. They enter the house, and it's like a creepy, dark, dungeony area, and they find a ball of twine, and they're like, oh, it'll help with what's clearly going to be a maze. And the door's locked, so they're like, we can only go onwards. And so they tie the twine to the door, and they head out. And then they walk around for a while. And then Zoe figures out the pattern, because Zoe is smart.
Yes.
And I love Zoe. They've been pretty consistent about that. They've not dumbed her down any yet. I'm worried that they will, but so far she's been pretty consistently awesome.
Yeah.
Because she's like, I've been noticing there's a pattern of like, there's a left, and then two rights, and then... a left and then three rights, and then like there's a building pattern to
which is convenient because they've just ran out of twine. So which is something that Jamie tries to tell them, and again they're like, Jamie, shh, we're being smart. And Jamie's like, will you please just listen to me?
And instead of being like, all right, well, I've got this pattern figured out, let's continue on, they're like, Jamie, you stay here just in case we're wrong. And then they abandon Jamie. And also, Zoe has a nice line where she's like worried about it, but she's like, they don't want us to find a way out. They want us to find a way in. They're leading us somewhere. And, which they do. They find the middle of the maze, which has a pile of bones there, which is welcoming. And, then something roars. It's a minotaur!
Cause it's a maze. That's how mazes work.
Which we have minotaurs coming up too, like actual minotaurs, I believe.
Not just fictional ones.
Not just fictional ones. And wasn't there one in, was it, in New Who? The God Complex, right?
Yeah, the God Complex, which is, look, whether or not you think that episode is brilliant, and for the record it is, calling it the God Complex, that's the best title you could have given that episode.
I love that episode, that's a great episode. And then, meanwhile, while they're being approached by the minotaur, toy soldiers come for Jamie. And Jamie resorts to his usual tactic of covering things with fabric.
That is his one plan that always seems to work for him.
Just throw a blanket on it, and it works. So he throws
his jacket
over the toy soldier and gets away.
Yay!
Mission accomplished!
They all step in the TARDIS and leave and go home.
It's a very quick episode. But no, the Doctor and Zoe pull the same trick on the Minotaur that they pulled on the Unicorn and unbelieve it into cardboard. They go to look for Jamie and they can't find him. They find his coat and Zoe puts it on and it's adorable. It goes really well with her sparkly jumpsuit. But they do bump into Gulliver again, and this is where we find out he's Gulliver, because they ask him where to find the Master and he starts saying stuff, and the Doctor realizes that he's Gulliver. That he can only... does he only speak in lines from Gulliver's Travel?
Yeah, he's quoting the book. Not just his lines in the story, but, I mean, Gulliver's Travels is, I believe, told in the first person. So it uses his descriptive text as well.
So was there a master in Gulliver's Travel?
You know, I honestly cannot remember.
Because he does mention the master by name, so maybe, yeah. But then they've realized they're in a world of fiction. The land of fiction. So they've previously said there's no way out of the maze. Yet Jamie somehow finds a way out of the maze and starts climbing up this wall to get away from the toy soldiers.
He's climbing up the boulders.
Yeah.
He gets up to the top where he can't climb anymore and
it's just a sheer rock wall.
It sure would be nice if I had a rope.
And then a rope appears. Rope
drops down.
Except it's not a rope. That shit's Rapunzel.
We're in the land of fairy tales. That shit's for sure Rapunzel.
And she's okay with him using her hair, but not okay with the fact that he's not a prince.
I like that Rapunzel is like a recurring plot device. There are multiple times where people need a rope and they just go, oh, go get Rapunzel.
But she lets him in anyway. And as soon as he gets in there, she disappears. The room is now like very science fiction-y. And there's like a thing that's reading books out loud. And there's a ticker tape with like a story being printed on it. It says works in progress. And it's telling the story of what's happening to the Doctor and Zoe. And the Doctor and Zoe have bumped into Medusa. That her hair comes to life and...
That was pretty cool, yeah. The snakes.
Oh yeah, that animation was fantastic. Now that's from something. I'm almost 100% confident that it is lifted from some other production. In fact, let me see if I can find out. Interesting. I'm not seeing anything about it on the wiki. Now the Medusa does have a credit that Sue Pulford played the Medusa in the story.
Maybe they actually made it.
Maybe it was in-house.
Either way, it's impressive. It looked very cool. It was very effective. And that's it. That's the end of episode 3. These episodes go by fast. They're the shortest.
They're 20 minutes apiece.
The last episode's only 18 minutes.
Yeah, it's bananas.
It's the shortest episode of Doctor Who. But we're now into episode 4, which I've called Team TARDIS v. Fanfiction, Dawn of Carcass.
That's perfect. I'm not even going to try to improve on that.
This is probably my favorite episode in the serial.
For reasons we'll get to, which are amazing. Jamie's reading the story off as it's happening, and he's like, they're in trouble, but the Doctor finds a sword and slices off the head of the Medusa. The Doctor finds a sword, but he's like, what? No, we're going to use this mirror. That's what you do with Medusas. They don't unbelieve Medusa because Zoe's being particularly reluctant to not believe in it.
I think Zoe is particularly afraid of Medusa.
She's like, but it's touching me. It has to be real. But they use the mirror on Medusa. Medusa turns back into a statue and they're fine.
Which somehow breaks the little ticker tape.
And it's like, uh-oh, story failure. Gulliver comes into the room after Jamie sets off an alarm, which is going to bring more robots. So Jamie hides and once again trusts Gulliver to not rat him out. Which he doesn't, though, because the robots just sort of come in and then leave.
But Gulliver's all right this time.
And then the cool thing happens. The Doctor and Zoe get out of the cave, and they're walking around, and they bump into... They're shot at.
By the carcass.
Which apparently is spelled K-A-R-K-U-S, but when watching it, I don't see any letters, so I just assumed it was, like, a dead...
Carcass.
Carcass, yeah.
But by the way, just for those who are interested, the carcass is played by Michael Cera wearing the muscle bodysuit from that one episode of Arrested Development. Or near enough, because bloody hell. It's literally guy, muscle suit, mask, cape, gun, done. I think the actor was wearing his own pants.
It's not the best costume. But that's Doctor Who's first superhero.
It's a superhero!
Which we're going to get a new one soon, right?
Predates the unnamed superhero in the upcoming Christmas special.
And the return of Dr. Mysterio, right?
It's a superhero from Zoe's time.
The year 2000 is...
The far distant future of the year 2000.
Or it was from the comic strip 2000 AD, the comic. That's where Judge Dredd originated.
Oh.
Anyway.
Good job.
But the carcass is, you know, your stereotype. Is he supposed to be a superhero or a supervillain?
You know, I don't know, but what I am going to do is quickly look it up. And the wiki says he was the fictional superhero and protagonist of a comic strip.
So he's supposed to be a good guy.
I guess, but that is the lamest goddamn costume. I mean, that is just bad.
But it's glorious, though.
There's something about seeing a superhero on Doctor Who that just feels right.
It starts fighting them, and then Zoe turns out to be a secret badass.
Zoe kicks the superhero's ass! Just throwing him all around.
Flipping
all over the
shoulder.
Place. And it's great. And I loved it.
Oh, it was marvelous.
And because she bests him so well, he's like, I am now indebted to you.
I think the exact quote is, nah, fair cop, love, you beat me fair and square. I'm all yours, innit? I'm your slave. And you's my master. And that's how it goes, though. That's horrible. I'm sorry. All of that was the worst thing I've ever done in my life.
Which, it's convenient that Zoe's able to kick the superhero's ass, because the doctor is like, I don't know that this is a fictional character, so I can't not believe in it?
That seems logical.
But it's fine, because Zoe's awesome.
Though he does not believe in his gun at all. He's like, there's no way that gun could actually exist.
That's bad science.
The doctor criticizing a thing for having bad science. That's funny. The carcass is now going to lead them to the master.
Yeah. Easy. Easy peasy.
They get taken to the master, or they get taken to the place basically where Jamie was with the ticker tape. And then they realize that if they had gone along with the story instead of subverting the tropes, they would have become fiction?
Interesting. What?
Yeah, I don't know how they came to that conclusion with what the information they had, but yeah, all right.
But they did, and we'll allow it because everything else in the serial is good.
And they get led to the master, and the master is just this guy.
In a hat.
In a hat. Who wrote a serial. I forget the name of it, but he's from 1926 and he wrote this one serial. And
he's very prolific, and so he's been taken and hooked up to this computer to keep this fictional world going.
Because he's such a great writer.
He's so good.
He's so good that he steals other people's stories.
Well, I guess we move past the part where the doctor gets into the Citadel by pretending to be the carcass.
Oh, yeah. I forgot that happened.
Yeah, he puts on the cloak and says, oh, I'm the carcass, I'm from this newspaper. And they're like, okay, cool. They don't question it. They don't do any follow-up research.
Well, they're fictional. They're badly written. You can literally use that as an excuse for plot holes. They're just badly written. Literally. It's the land of fiction. That's how it works. And then we basically find out that the master's not necessarily a bad guy. He's sort of a prisoner of this big brain that he's hooked up to. He's basically like, all right, so the reason why the intelligence behind this big brain wants you, Doctor, is that he wants you to replace me, because I'm human, and I age, and I'm gonna die. But you live outside of time. You're ageless. You could be here forever. It's a combination of a plot to get the brain to have somebody that'll work for him forever, and also slightly a plot so that the master, the guy that's under control of the brain, to get out of there, because he doesn't want to be a prisoner there anymore.
Shockingly, the doctor turns down this offer. He says, no, thank you.
Yeah, I'm pretty good with, I like having, like, the freedom to be elsewhere and do things. So I'm gonna reinforce my ability to do that by politely declining your offer of, like, a lifetime of, I want to say servitude. It's not really what I want. Why, the thing is, if the land of fiction, why does the land of fiction need a master? That's one thing I don't understand. Because all these fictional characters existed before this person was there. And they're all gonna exist after. Like, it's not really explained in any detail what his purpose is.
I think what it is like the brain is like a publishing corporation, but it's not a writer. So it needs someone to create these things to give it power.
That makes sense.
To create the product.
That makes sense enough for me to move on, which is sometimes all you need.
So the doctor turns him down and they just let him go, and that's the end.
Yeah, the master is all, well, you know what, it's cool, because I'm just gonna kill Jamie and Zoe. I'll just write that into a story. So he does.
He's like, I'm gonna write a shitty ending for him.
And the doctor still says no.
No, he's like, it's either you or Jamie and Zoe. He also says resistance is useless.
Which is pretty great.
That's such a sci-fi cliche. I love it.
And then Jamie and Zoe are crushed into a giant book.
And that's the end of episode 4.
They get squished like bugs.
Inside of a book. And we're now into episode 5, which I've called Take a Look, They're in a Book.
Can't top that.
Ah, that's why I was rushing to get to it.
He knew it was good. He was excited.
So, the master's still... Well, your friends are trapped in a book now. I'm just reading Rainbow, those fat mother hubbards. The doctor's like, nah, I'm good. I'm fine. I don't need that. I'm okay.
You don't know how many of these fuckers I've went through already.
I'm not even halfway through the number of people I've had traveling with me.
I go through them like Kleenex. But then the robots come in to threaten him some more. In a brilliant moment of logic, the doctor's like, well, I can get away because robots can't climb, and just starts climbing up this, like, shelf.
Which is a great plan.
I mean, you can't argue with it. It's genius.
Because robots can't climb.
And dogs can't look up.
Big Al said so. And then he reaches the window, and he tries to open it, and he can't. And he says, I wish I had the strength of the carcass. And the carcass shows up. I'm like, all right, I'll do it. I got you.
Well, before that happens, though, he bumps into Jamie and Zoe.
Oh, he does, doesn't he?
Yeah, and he's like, hey, you're fine.
And they're like, yeah, we're fine. Yeah, we're fine. Yeah, we're fine.
Who turned out the lights?
I mean, that's not the exact dialogue, but that's basically it.
They have looping dialogue because no one wrote it enough for them.
Which none of the other fictional characters in this act like that.
We should go. Doctor, who turned out the lights?
Which serial was that?
Silence in the Library, Forest of the Dead. Not technically a serial.
He's now in classic Who mode. Wasn't there also another serial where there was like a companion repeating herself?
Well,
not binary. Classic Who serial. Anyway, loops happen a lot in this show.
It's a show about time travel. I'd be disappointed if there weren't loops.
But that's when, yeah, that's after that, the doctor's like, well, I want to write my own story. And then he goes over to that window where the sort of typewriter thing is.
The master.
And that's when he calls on the strength of the carcass.
State-of-the-art ticker tape technology.
I just find it hilarious when they're like, we're in the future, look at this future technology. It's always like something that's like super dated now. Like when the first episode with Zoe and she's like recording something and
on
it's
a tape
like
recorder.
Yeah, on a tape recorder, and Jamie comes in and talks over it and she's like, you messed up my recording, and he's like, what? What's a recording? And she's like, this, and she rewinds it and it's like it's on tape. It's the future. They would not be recording on tape.
Something that bugs me along those lines is in Batman Arkham Asylum. I don't know if you guys have played it, but when you're in the elevator escorting the Joker down into the asylum, there's a power cut and then everything comes back on. And then the AV presentation that was playing in the elevator, instead of just, like, popping back onto life, it starts up again like an old tape where it goes... It's like, there's no way this is running off of a film. What is wrong with you? Like, that, it annoys me every single time.
I didn't know what scene you're talking about. I didn't notice that, but that's going to bug me now. Also, it'd probably just start from the beginning, wouldn't it? It would just be like, it'd have like the Windows error message or something.
We're sorry, but you did not safely shut down your computer at last shutdown. We're going to have to perform a virus scan. And then the carcass shows up.
In a flash of Batman 66 graphics.
Same year and everything. Oh, wait, no, this was 69, wasn't it?
I think it's 68, yeah. This could have been influenced by Batman. That's weird. Because it's black and white and stuff. It seems weird that this was after Batman. It weirds me out a little. I don't know.
The BBC was broadcasting in colour at this point, but they didn't start producing Doctor Who in colour until 70. Well, 69, it aired in 70.
It feels older than, like, I don't know, Batman seems more...
It's just the colour thing.
It's the colour, and I feel like the pace. I don't feel like Batman has a slow pace.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you have to remember the BBC was broadcasting in high def for years before Doctor Who finally started being produced in high definition. So it's not the first time that Doctor Who has been filmed in an, at the time, outdated filming method to save money.
I mean, it seems like they still want to save money. Hence the Power of the Daleks animation.
Well, those animations almost never have money. And you have to remember that they probably had the same budget that, say, Cosgrove Hall had to animate two episodes. They had to spread that amongst six.
Yeah. Did you watch the, like, making of after The Power of the Daleks? All of them just looked tired.
Nobody looked happy.
We did what we could. That was the...
Please don't judge us. We tried our best. We tried so hard.
Anyway, so the carcass rips open the mirror. The carcass rips open the window.
What is a window if not an unfinished mirror?
And then he's like, now, that's great, but now how do I get down there? If only I had the hair of Rapunzel. Rapunzel's like, what's up? Are you a prince? And he's like, no. She's like, damn, climb my hair anyway. I don't care anymore.
She's been waiting so long, she's run out of fucks to give. Vis-a-vis hair interaction.
I will settle for you. Rapunzel just have like a really strong like hair pulling kink. That's...
Oh.
So the master sees that this is happening and is like, I know what I'll do. I'm going to write in that... The doctor is a villain, and he's awful and terrible. I'm going to spread this anti-doctor propaganda. The fake Jamie and Zoe now think that the doctor is a villain. But they show up with the TARDIS. The doctor's like, oh, you guys are back. And he's like, yeah, we did it somehow. Get in the TARDIS. And so the doctor gets in the TARDIS, and they slam the door, and they're like, haha, you fell for our evil plan. and there's a fake front falls down, and the doctor is inside this, like, weird glass contraption. Describing this, it sounds like I'm making shit up.
It sounds like you've forgotten what is in this episode, so you're just like spitballing an episode. You're doing Doctor Who improv.
But no, all of that literally happened. So then they take the glassed up doctor to the master. The master's like, well, I'm going to forcibly put you into the computer, the brain thing. And then the ultimate plan is apparently to, like, invade, like, Earth or something, right? And, like, get all the humans and readjust them to their story.
Yeah, I don't know why, but that is the plan.
We have to up the stakes. But now it becomes a battle of wits because the Doctor hasn't completely conformed to the will of the Master. And they just sort of start out trying to outright each other.
The carcass shoots one of the robots, and then the master's like, oh, fuck. But then the carcass realizes his mistake, and he turns on Jamie and Zoe.
Right, because Joey and Zamy was a show on the CW. Actually, the WB.
Was that the one that Melissa Joan Hart was in?
Yes. Not the one with the talking cat.
No, that's Sabrina the Teenage Witch, which is a spin-off of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I just assume they exist in the same universe. I don't care that you're trying to tell the story. I'm trying to riff on bad sitcoms from the 90s.
Buffy is a great sitcom from the 90s.
No, Buffy's not a sitcom. B, Sabrina is the show I was referring to when I was referring to bad sitcoms.
The other day, for no reason at all, I watched like a compilation of the best of the cat from Sabrina the Teenage Witch on YouTube. It was like recommended for me on YouTube, and I was like, why is this recommended? And I clicked on it and watched it for like 20 minutes.
Have you ever expressed any interest in that show or the cat?
I mean, when I was a kid, yeah. And it definitely,
but
the
not,
cat was my favorite
not
character.
Not to the Google overlords?
Not to the Google overlords. I don't know why it popped up.
Well, apparently it knew because you watched it for 20 minutes.
I know what happened. I had watched a Funny or Die video or something like that. And they recently did a Sabrina and the Cat, like, nowadays.
I
and they're going
like
to bring magic back.
Awfully hard to justify.
And I watched
this.
That and it was terrible. But that, yeah. That's how it happened. That's how I got there. I did like the cat. I also kind of had a crush on Caroline Wright. Anyway, that's one of the aunts. The funny one.
Hilda?
I don't remember her name. I just know her real name. It's Caroline Wright. She's a comedian. She's awesome. Anyway.
Yeah, it's her.
Anyway.
We're learning too much about me. Let's talk about Doctor Who.
Coming up next on the Jocast.
So yeah, the first thing the Doctor does is free Jamie and Zoe from the book. And then that's when the carcass shoots the thing, and he's like, no, the carcass turns on Jamie and Zoe. So it's not turning on the fake Jamie and Zoe, it's turning on the real, for real Jamie and Zoe.
The for real Zoes.
And then they just start riding back and forth of, like, then Cyrano, how do you pronounce that, de Bergerac?
Yes.
The dude with the nose comes out and starts fighting D'Artagnan from the Three Musketeers, and then they turn into Blackbeard and Lancelot. And it's like, first off, that doesn't really protect Jamie and Zoe. It just creates side fights. So I don't know how that's helpful.
Lancelot disarms Blackbeard. The computer has had enough of this and decides to destroy the Doctor. The Master of the Land of Fiction begs the computer not to kill the Master because he's the only one who can replace him.
The only way he can get out of this.
And the robots free the Doctor and turn on, decide to destroy. What do they do? They're something with their beams. I can't remember. The climax of this story is very kind of nebulous. It's very, oh, is this the last episode? We've got 5 minutes left? Shit.
Which they did. They had plenty of time, and this episode's only 18 minutes long.
I think they kind of was like, we're just going to self-destruct everything. That seems easier.
I do want to say, I really like that scene of him, like, begging the brain to, like, not destroy the Doctor, because, like, it's kind of fucked up. I enjoy that. It reminded me a lot of, like, Pat Masambahava in,
Gesundheit.
In, what was it? The Yeti episode. The Abominable Snowman. Of, like, just being sort of under, you're the bad guy, but you're kind of under the control of this thing, and you just kind of want out. But, yeah, the robots come after the Doctor. Like, I think that's why he's riding, the Master's riding, is that the robots come after the Doctor and there's no way out. But then Zoe and Jamie come to save the day by pressing a bunch of buttons.
Just randomly.
They just smash buttons on this console and, like, hopefully that'll do something.
It does.
They overload the brain and shit starts exploding. But they're like, come on, Doctor, we gotta get out. He's like, hold on. And he pulls the hat off of the Master, unhooks him from the brain, and they all get out. The robots are firing at everything, including themselves. Stuff's exploding. The master guy is like, who are you guys? What's going on? I'm a writer. And they're like, oh, you clearly don't remember anything. And he's like, you were trapped in this land of things or whatever, and it's going to explode, so hopefully we'll all go back home. Or Oblivion?
He just decides, yeah, we should be fine. Or maybe we'll be destroyed.
Again, it's 50-50. I don't really stress about that.
And then it just...
So either I die or everything's fixed.
Then, like, something explodes, and then it shows the TARDIS spinning in that void, and that's it! It just stops!
That's the end of the story, and then that leads directly into the beginning of the next serial, The Invasion. Which we won't be discussing, because it's far too awesome.
That's like the second or third time that they've just abruptly ended a serial. Is that just a Two thing, or is that a Doctor Who thing in general? I don't know yet.
It's sounds like a 60s thing.
But that's it. That's the Mind Robber.
That's the Mind Robber.
It's still a serial I really enjoy watching. It's probably the least Doctor Who story in Classic Who, because it is just a bunch of nonsense strung together. It's literally a bunch of nonsense strung together. By design, it's a bunch of nonsense strung together, and I think that there's something very enjoyable about that. I have a very emotional attachment to The Mind Robber, because it's one of the earliest Doctor Who stories I remember watching. I think it's the earliest memory I have of watching Doctor Who in my childhood is watching The Mind Robber. But I really enjoy it. Like, still to this day, it's one of those stories where if I'm ever in a bad mood, it's one of those things that, you know, like Galaxy Quest or Princess Bride, I can just throw it on and enjoy it. It's great. It's stupid. It's great and it's stupid. And I love it.
I feel about The Mind Robber very similar to how I feel about Edge of Destruction, which is that I spend a lot of time not knowing what's happening and liking that a lot. It is a lot of nonsense, but it's in a way that it's doing something weird and new and interesting, and even though it doesn't all necessarily fit together all the time, it's still really fun to watch.
Yeah, it's a different sort of Doctor Who story.
You said that it's the most un-Doctor Who, but for me, this felt like the most Doctor Who episode we've watched yet, in that, I don't know, the episodes I tend to prefer are the ones that are sort of weird and out there and trying new and different things. Here's like a weird concept we're throwing at you. Go with it. And that's what this very much is. This is the first time I feel like the show's went completely balls to the wall weird. And I love that. And also, it's the shortest, like, the episodes are shorter than normal, which I think actually helps a lot. The pace is super amazingly good. Like, no point are you bored.
You could probably edit this serial into 4 28-minute stories without really losing it. It's 4 28-minute episodes and get broadly the same experience without losing anything.
And and there's so much going on. At no point does it drag, because they're constantly changing things. Things are constantly happening. There's no point where they're just sitting around discussing their plans. To me, this also seems very similar to a couple of previous serials. It feels similar in tone to The Edge of Destruction, similar in tone to that first episode of The Space Museum. It also seems similar to The Celestial Toymaker, except that it's good.
Ouch. And
The Celestial Toymaker is not great. It's okay. I did like that sort of feel to it, though. It has that, we're doing something weird and different. Also, just like things of like games and stuff, I don't know. And that's what a lot of this was. It's just playing with things people already know and just throwing it all into a blender and seeing what happens. But I enjoyed it. It was great. I really liked it. I think it may be my favorite Doctor Who serial we've watched so far in the Watchathon.
Definitely favorite two serial.
I think it might be my favorite so far, just because it's so fun. So much fun. I mean, it has Zoe flipping a dude over her shoulder, who's a superhero.
That's true.
And that looked great.
And also Sparkly Butt.
Hmm.
Ben, anything you want to plug before we end this?
I don't have anything to plug at the moment. I do have... British Candy Authority is back. We did a new episode last week, and there's a new episode that will be going up this week. And there'll be another one the following week. And then we should be shooting more. I'm also shooting a new episode of Port Center, hopefully later this week, although I am now sick, so that may have to wait till after the weekend.
And that will be irrelevant time-wise, because this goes up in like 3 weeks.
Yeah, there'll be more Port... There's more Port Center, there's more British Candy Authority. Just go to benpadden.net, you can see what I'm up to there. Because some of us know how to buy domains properly, Joe. Seth.
I'm blaming Tony for that one.
What did I do?
The R problem.
That's... Yeah.
What is your podcast? Is whatyourass.org?
It's not Watch Your Ass at all. It's Watch Your Rassilon with one R.
I went to watchyourass.com and it's snowboard butt guards. I'm not even kidding.
Shit. We should really address that.
But yeah, your URL is watchyourassilon.com.
Yep. We should fix that. Life is hard, you guys.
It's not easy.
Speaking of our website, if you liked this episode, you can check out more on watchyourassilon.com. That's with one R.
Go to Watch Your Ass. That's not us.
They do snowboard cards.
We may or may not fix that in the future.
Watch Your Ass?
If you want to us to fix that, maybe be a patron, which you can get to at patreon.com/watchathon, and there you can donate a monthly amount to get all kinds of rewards, like videos of us watching the episodes, uncut video of the podcast records, where you'll get to hear Ben make all sorts of noises for a very long time.
Yeah.
And also, you can go to watchyourassilon.com/support, and there is a link to our Amazon wish list there, where you can sponsor an episode of the podcast by purchasing the corresponding serial on DVD for us. We'll mention you in the podcast and put your name on our Friends of Rassilon page.
Does that happen a lot?
It's happened a couple times. It's about to happen right now. Special thanks to Matt Golden for sponsoring this episode. You can check him out at mgoldentumbles.tumblr.com. That's tumbles without an E because it's Tumblr.
Hey, Matt.
You're the best. And again, also be sure to rate and comment on our iTunes. Leave us a nice review on iTunes, guys. We want reviews.
You can leave us a mediocre review. We'll take that.
Yeah, we'll take anything you want to dish out. Expecting
maybe not a bad one, though. I have very fragile feelings.
And Ben hits backspace on his keyboard. Thanks for listening, and tune in next time when we talk about the invasion, where we very purposefully don't have Ben Patton.
Oh, great. Thanks.
You're welcome, sir.
Maybe I won't do that. Maybe my podcast won't have you guys in it. Maybe I'll get Gerard Depardieu and Andy McDowell.
If you could get them, why wouldn't you?
Yeah, and instead of it being a Doctor Who tabletop, we'll do a green card roleplay.
Don't you think they've already done that before? Wouldn't they want to try something different?
Yeah, but this time all their choices and the outcomes are determined by random dice rolls. So they could totally change the outcome of the experience.
I think that should be the next podcast. We should develop a green card roleplaying game.
Let's do it.
I think there's a market for that.
I think the market is everyone who's currently participating in this recording, and even then I'm not entirely sure about Tony.
She has no idea what we're talking about. I can
none whatsoever.
It.
She was asleep.
I would prefer a My Father, the Hero role-playing game, but, you know.
I would prefer a My Brother and Me role-playing game, but what do I know?
I am basically hearing gibberish.
That's fair.
That's it. Bye, you guys.
Bye, thanks. We love you.
Keep calm and wrestle on.
I love you specifically.
I'm emotionally indifferent towards you.
That's how you get listeners for your new podcast.
Yeah, play hard to get.
They're coming back.
Well, what do we do?
We hide in among the trees. Quick, there's a jay. There's room for two.
Oh, thank goodness, there's a letter C.